Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza and Matt Polacek, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to all of you listening around the world, and a warm welcome as we bring you another edition of the Answers for the Family radio show. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza, and if you're a regular listener, thank you for joining us once again. And if this is your first time, please make yourself at home as we bring you Answers for the Family. Now, this show will address issues such as locating your runaway teen, family crisis intervention, building self-esteem, dealing with addictions, and so much more. Now, having over 30 years' experience working with families in crisis, I've been fortunate to meet and work with some of the top professionals in many of the helping fields and skilled authors who are all working to make this world a better place for all of us. Now, while my co-host, Dr. Matt Polacek, takes some time away from the show, we've been bringing in some wonderful guest hosts who, like Matt, are making a positive difference in the lives of others. Now, today, I'll be operating solo, but please check out some of our past shows to hear some informative and entertaining guests, as well as some dynamic co-hosts. Now, I'm also looking for some show ambassador listeners who will forward at least one of our shows to your social media groups and or to someone you know who can benefit from a particular subject. Now, I truly appreciate it, and this is just another way that we can make a positive difference in the lives of others. Now, our topic today is one that we've gotten a lot of questions already sent in on, so obviously it is something that people are thinking about. This has to do with putting together individualized treatment plans that will facilitate the most appropriate match of community resources with the child or adolescent specific needs. Our guests are Dr. Amanda Stokel and Dr. Matthew Pearson. Dr. Pearson is a child and adolescent inpatient hospitalist at the University of Utah Neuropsychiatric Institute, or UNI. He is also an assistant professor who earned his medical degree at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. He then completed his psychiatry residency and child and adolescent psychiatry fellowship at Duke University. Dr. Pearson is the co-medical director of the Comprehensive Assessment and Treatment Program at UNI and is an active member of the American Academy of Child and Adolescent Psychiatry. Now, Dr. Amanda Stokel is a licensed psychologist and the program specialist for the Comprehensive Assessment and Treatment Program at UNI. She received her PhD in school psychology from the University of Northern Colorado and completed her clinical internship at UNI. She has an adjunct faculty appointment at the University of Utah Department of Psychiatry, and her focus is providing psychological services to youth and young adults within the CAT program, and she has extensive training in psychological assessment. Dr. Stokel's therapeutic orientation is typically based on cognitive behavioral mythology. Amanda and Matthew, welcome to Answers for the Family.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, first of all, I want to let you know it is great to have you on. I don't know if if they told you, but this is something that we've actually tried to do for probably a couple of years, is to be able to get you guys on. So I appreciate you taking the time. Well, because it's a huge subject within, you know, this area that we work in. You know, we're working with a lot of at-risk youth, and the idea of assessment and treatment is something that so many parents are so nervous about. So, again, I think it's something that we're all looking forward to hearing more about, and I know that there's already a lot of interest because there's already been quite a few listener questions that have been text, emailed, and instant messaged into us in hopes to ask you. So I think to start off with, let's talk a little bit about your mission at UNI.
So The Comprehensive Assessment and Treatment Program, or CAT program for short, is, at the University of Utah, is a 4 to 6 week comprehensive clinical evaluation and treatment program that's housed here in our inpatient psychiatric setting in our hospital. What we do is we provide a longer length of stay than most psychiatric facilities typically are able to provide, yet an intensive stay is intense in terms of evaluation and treatment and contact providers that you would have in a hospital. So our mission is to work with patients and families who are dealing with complex mental health issues, struggling to function in their communities, and not able to get the help that they need with traditional treatment programs at home.
And Amanda, what would you add to that?
I would add that, a lot of the families that we serve, they've made heroic efforts to try to have their children be served in their communities at home, and they've exhausted the resources that are available to them in their home communities. Intensive outpatient treatment and day treatment programs near them.
Now, share with our listeners kind of the age range that you're working with, because I know that is something that is unique. There's many programs out there that focus just strictly on a sort of an older teen focus or a young adult focus. Share a little bit more about your age range and why you're able to reach such a broader range of young people.
Right. So the age range that we serve is 5 to 17 years old. And the reason why we're able to serve such a wide range of ages is because we have various units within the hospital. So we have a child unit that serves kids ages from 5 to about 12. And then we have adolescent units as well that serve 13 to 17 years old. And so I think that is unique in terms of our setting, that we are a psychiatric hospital that can serve a wide range of individuals with various needs.
Yeah, and one of the things that I've seen is that there seems to be a need for services for younger and younger children, and at the same time, there also seems to be a shortage of places to where parents can take their children at those younger ages to get the help they need.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, where do most of your patients come from?
It really varies. We have a lot of patients who come from the West Coast, California, Southern California, the Bay Area, Seattle. We have a lot from the East Coast, New York, the Southeast. We even have some that come internationally. It really does vary. It's a diverse group of people.
Mm-hmm. And I would add to that, as we mentioned before, a lot of our patients are coming from home because families have exhausted the resources in their communities. But also sometimes we work with children and adolescents who are coming from a residential treatment program or a therapeutic boarding school or even a wilderness program where they're struggling in terms of an acute psychiatric issue, or perhaps there's a diagnostic question that has befuddled treatment providers, or for whatever reason, the goodness of fit at their prior setting wasn't a good match. And so referral sources will refer their clients to us. in that context as well.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the things that's beautiful as someone who for over 30 years has worked within this culture, you know, is the fact that there are so many programs out there that are so focused on just helping the children that as soon as they recognize that maybe this isn't the best fit, they're very comfortable with contacting, you know, someone like yourself and saying, look, I think this is a better fit, or maybe they need to go to you first before they come back to a particular program. And I think that's something that a lot of parents don't realize, just how valuable that is to have that sort of working relationship with so many other great programs out there.
Right. I think over the years, we certainly have, you know, established relationships with, you know, various residential treatment programs, therapeutic boarding schools, and wilderness programs where, you know, we're able to provide that diagnostic clarity or reevaluate medications and then return the child or adolescent back into that environment with providing direction for perhaps tweaking a therapeutic modality or suggesting a new medication and so that individual is able to be successful in their original environment.
Yeah, we have a question that's coming across right now, and this is one that that I've been asked quite often, and that is where a child may be getting close to aging out as far as parents having much leverage to be able to work with them. And this one reads, our newly turned 17-year-old daughter has been in treatment locally for over 2 years for alcohol and drug abuse. She is up and down like a yo-yo. The excuses for her behavior are never-ending, and her inability to function, she claims, is due to her insomnia and overall not feeling well. We have put in place a drug testing protocol, but we suspect the alcohol is her drug of choice presently. She will turn 18 in less than a year, and I am pushing my husband to send her to a boarding program before we no longer have any say in her life. We are hoping you will share how your program would work with someone like her, and most of all, do you think we are too late to make a difference in her life? And this is from Brittany in California.
Well, that's a great question, and we actually, well, first, no, you're not too late. We work with families in this same situation quite often, especially when you have patients who are 16, 17, you feel like you're running out of time. And in some ways you are, but it's not too late to get someone pointed in the right track. And if someone wants to come into our program, we've had patients who are here and have turned 18, and as long as, you know, the patient is willing to stay voluntarily and complete the program with us, it's never a problem. We do try to work quickly and get people into what we feel would be the best therapeutic setting, whether it be a boarding school or a wilderness program or more of a residential treatment program, whatever it may be. That, you know, not to skip ahead, but that is the goal by the end of your time with us would be for us to make the recommendation for where to go. So we try to work quickly to get someone there and to get on the right track before they turn 18 and the parents have less say over where they go and what they do.
Yeah, I think you make a great point, and I think a lot of that has to do with the trust that once that young person is in your program, as they start to recognize that they are doing better and that there becomes a trust and a bond, you get that situation in which they now feel as though there's so much positive going on in their life that they want to stay. They want to make that decision to stay even after they're 18 because they can see that that is something that's really working well for them. And I think that speaks volumes about your program and many of the other programs that are set up that way. Now, some of the questions that have come in also have to do with the type of young people that you're working with. I mean, there's you know, as much as I still advise any of the parents that are out there, you know, that if you can speak with one of your local psychiatrists, psychologists that you're working with, speak with the local educational consultant, having knowledge about the different programs out there is still very beneficial. So the question would be, what are most of the young people admitted to the program, what are they usually diagnosed with that would tell some of these people, yes, I think my child might be a good fit?
So we work with children and adolescents who are dealing with a variety of psychiatric issues. I would say that the majority of our patients leave with a diagnosis related to a mood disorder or anxiety-related disorder. I would say that that's predominantly the main diagnosis of our patients who we work with. Also, trauma comes up quite a bit. We deal with patients who are dealing with thought disorders, so some form of psychosis. Some children and adolescents are diagnosed with an autism spectrum disorder. Also, executive functioning issues, ADHD, learning disorders, substance use disorders as well. So really a wide variety of mental health issues.
Now, you mentioned mood disorder, and I know that Dr. Pearson, as a clinician and researcher in the treatment-resistant mood disorder clinic, what are some of the treatments you perform for severe mood disorders?
Well, you know, there are more and more treatments becoming available. Medication and therapy are kind of the go-to standard. When used in combination for depression, for example, you get the highest likelihood of response. Then, you know, there's always a group of people, though, who struggle to respond fully to even really heroic attempts at medication management and lots of therapy. Fortunately, there are other areas in the area of neurostimulation. So a lot of people are surprised to hear, but there are treatments like electroconvulsive therapy, what we used to call shock therapy. Electroconvulsive therapy, or ECT, has been around since the 1930s. It's predominantly used in adults. We have occasionally treated adolescents who have severe mood disorders or who have catatonia. It's another diagnosis that it can really, in a lot of cases, be almost a miraculous treatment for. TMS, or transcranial magnetic stimulation, is a newer modality that stimulates a certain part of the brain with an electromagnet. We do that here as well. And this is not predominantly the CAP program. We're a full psychiatric hospital. And you'll find most large hospitals will have these kinds of treatments available to them. Ketamine infusions is a newer, probably the newest treatment. That's not yet FDA approved, but there's been some early data showing that ketamine can really improve depression as well. And I'll just add, too, when we talk about mood disorders, the other major mood disorder is bipolar disorder. That is a somewhat controversial but really important area of child and adolescent psychiatry to be aware of. Bipolar disorder is very real, and usually it does onset in, you know, if not early adulthood, in late adolescence. So sometimes when people are depressed and not getting better, we do wonder about an underlying bipolar illness. And we do get referrals. We have a lot of patients who have had that that term thrown around, and no one's ever been sure. So we try to clarify if that's there as well.
Now, you bring up a good point about that term being thrown around, because it certainly is. Now, for many of the parents that are out there that have heard that term but don't really know what it means, explain a little bit about what that term means, what their professional is diagnosing.
Bipolar disorder specifically?
Yes.
Yeah, so, you know, depression we all have a good sense for what depression is. So someone has a prolonged period with sadness, tearfulness, a low mood, not interested in things. Your energy's low. You feel badly about yourself. You feel guilty all the time. It's harder to focus. Everything seems to kind of slow down. And quite often you think about suicide. In bipolar disorder, the simplest way to describe it is that people also swing the other direction. And they can have episodes of an elevated mood where they feel really good. In fact, not just good, like, you know, it's a good day and I feel good, but, you know, abnormally good, really silly and energetic, maybe not needing to sleep as much because they're so energetic. So staying up all night and just continuing to keep going for several days, talking a lot more, lots of goals, lots of activity. It's a real change from their baseline and from what you would normally expect. And if you have that, we call that a manic episode. If you have right. a milder form, we would call it a hypomanic episode. But in both cases, there are clear elevations in mood. Sometimes it's really hard to tell because, you know, teenagers can all act impulsively and energetic and want to stay up all night sometimes. That's an advantage to our program, again, in a 4 to 6 week program where we have 24/7 staff, daily contact with the physicians and with the psychologists and social workers. We're all paying close attention to what you're doing, and we're keenly observing you.
Now you mentioned the CAT program, and so who is involved in a patient's care while at the Uni CAT program? So, you know, as if you were now talking to some parents that were thinking, you know, I think my child might be a good fit for this, kind of walk through some of the questions you would have for them and then what you would explain to them as to who is going to be involved with their child.
Sure. So we take a very multidisciplinary approach in terms of our program. So our treatment team consists of a psychiatrist, a psychologist, and social worker. That's our primary treatment team. The psychiatrist is meeting with the child or adolescent on a daily basis. The psychologist meets with the child or adolescent four times a week, and then the social worker is meeting with a patient on a daily basis as well. So the psychiatrist, his or her role is providing help with the medication evaluation, any medical issues that arise. The role of the psychologist is providing individual and family psychotherapy and also conducting a comprehensive neuropsychological evaluation with a patient. I think that is something I think that sets us apart. A lot of other assessment type programs, the assessment being done by someone else other than the person conducting the therapy. And it's really nice having the psychologist conducting the assessment and conducting the psychotherapy to really integrate the results of the assessment into therapy. The social worker's role is providing a lot of communication with the family, the referral source, pass-through programs, and then really helping to provide direction for that next step. So communicating with the next program, really being that liaison in terms of the next step for that patient. Other people who are involved in our multidisciplinary approach, expressive therapy. So our children and adolescents are receiving a lot of different expressive therapy groups during the day in terms of art and music and recreational therapy groups. Nursing is also very much involved in terms of the day-to-day activities of our patients, We have a dietitian who's meeting with our patients when nutrition issues come up in terms of implementing specific meal plans. We have an education specialist who provides an academic experience every day for 75 minutes. And we use that time as an assessment tool to assess learning styles, their executive functioning. We know that school is a big trigger for a lot of our patients, so it's really nice to have that be part of our assessment so we can talk to future programs about what works well, what doesn't in terms of one's academic functioning.
Yeah, you mentioned the dietary aspect of it, and there's so much new information now coming out as to how diet is affecting us in so many different ways. Share a little bit about what you're doing from a dietary standpoint and how that has become so valuable in the assessment portion of this.
Well, I think in our culture, diet is an important thing to consider, because in our culture, we often eat fast food, junk food, things that are not as good for our body and brain as they could be. We're becoming more aware of food sensitivities, allergies, gluten intolerance, dairy, and one of the things that we really try to focus on here is helping people have healthy eating habits. So three times a day, that means breakfast, lunch and dinner, balanced meals, the roughly the correct amount of calories for an individual. We track people's weight each week, more if necessary. If there are specific eating issues, for example, eating disorders, some of our patients have eating disorders. We always bring in our dietitian. We talk with them daily. There's more of an intensive focus on that. We're able to accommodate a lot, not all, but a lot of people's food sensitivities and allergies. So we are aware that can play a role in how people think and feel. So we do make it a focus.
And a lot of our families, dietary issues are a big trigger at home. Mm-hmm. Some of our patients, in talking to their parents, they've had to, put locks on their refrigerators or cupboards because some of their, some of our kids will, in the past, they have, searched for food to have during the night, and that's really played into some of the struggles that parents have at home in terms of navigating behavioral issues with their kids.
Yeah, I can't tell you how many times we've shown up at 4 o'clock in the morning to pick up a young person to take them to their treatment program, and in going into their room, seen stacks of pizza boxes with half-eaten pieces of pizza under the bed,
right,
laying on all of the counters, half-eaten potato chip bags and just stuff everywhere. And it's amazing, that it's going on. But, I'm glad that there's so much good information now that's showing that, that by correcting some of the dietary aspect of it is also helping, on so many other levels. Now I want to share with everybody. Now our guests are Dr. Amanda Stokel and Dr. Matthew Pearson. They are from the University of Utah Neuropsychiatric Institute, and we're talking about putting together individualized treatment plans that will facilitate the most appropriate match for community resources with the child or adolescent specific needs. So stay with us. We will be right back.
Founded over 30 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, Westshield has continually focused on resolving issues that negatively impact families and businesses. Our signature therapeutic transportation service helps to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely transported to specialized schools, programs, and treatment centers with unsurpassed experience and success. We are supported by our full-service licensed investigation agency that has legally, professionally, and compassionately located hundreds of runaways and teens. We are experienced and qualified to help, offering solutions which may include referrals to our international network of top professionals in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, psychiatry, and investigations. Simply put, West Shield Adolescent Services and West Shield Investigations are the best solutions when your family is facing a personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. That's 1-800-899-8585, or visit our website at westshield.com. Thank you.
And we're back. You're listening to Answers for the Family, and with us is Dr. Pearson and Dr. Stokel. While we were on the break, there was actually another question that came in, and this one reads, it says, I did not know your facility existed. I completed my master in child and adolescent psychiatry from the University of Utah 10 years ago, and shortly thereafter joined a practice in Northern Illinois. I was very impressed by what I read on your site. I will be tuning in to learn more, as we are currently considering adding a few more treatment programs to our patient recommendation list. This is from Joel T. in Idaho. So thank you, Joel T., for the comments, the positive feedback. But one of the questions that I also get from time to time is, why Utah? Now, and I have some of, you know, I believe I know what the reasons are, but share with our listeners, why Utah?
We think there's a handful of reasons, advantages, and nice things about where we are in our location. As far as the health system, the University of Utah health system, there's one of the major organizations that evaluates and ranks hospitals in terms of quality, the Vizient Quality and Accountability Program. They, for maybe a decade now, University of Utah health system has been in the top 10 nationally. In terms of quality, and last year actually was the number one program, number one health system in the nation in their rankings. And I can tell you, I've been really impressed after working in a few different hospitals. What stands out to me about our health system, the staff are fantastic. There's a real dedication to patient care. People really care. There's a real desire to coordinate and to communicate well. As far as the clinicians, the University of Utah, we say the U, recruits top clinicians from around the country. So the program is really strong. Our psychiatric hospital is a freestanding hospital that's just about a mile down the road from the main hospital. It's a beautiful building. Lots of big windows with natural light. We're literally back up to the Rocky Mountains. So you can look out one side and see the Salt Lake City Valley with the lights at night. And look out the other side and you see these snow-capped mountains literally right behind you. So it's a beautiful place to live and work. And for our patients, we're able to take advantage of that with our programming. So we have a ropes course here on the campus, but also there's hiking trails, things like that. And you know, when families come to visit, if they're from, you know, another state, which most of them are, when they fly in to visit, they take advantage of that, whether it be skiing in the wintertime or hiking during the other seasons, or even, you know, we're in Salt Lake City, so going downtown and having dinner, going to see a Broadway show, it's a really nice setting as well.
Yeah, and I think another advantage is the fact that in many cases, for a lot of these young people, just kind of getting out of the environment that they were in. You know, I mean, share how valuable that is, where they don't have the influences that they maybe had while they were in whatever city they came from.
Yeah, I think that's really important in terms of getting an accurate assessment, because as we know, there are a lot of environmental variables that influence one's behaviors and mood issues. So yeah, I think that's very important. Along with what Dr. Pearson mentioned, in talking to some parents who are considering having their child or adolescent come here, sometimes they're hesitant about having their child or adolescent be in a hospital during the 4 to 6 week assessment process, that they don't feel that their child or adolescent's behaviors or problems are severe enough to warrant hospitalization. And I think some parents have some preconceived notions about what a psychiatric hospital might be. But as Dr. Pearson mentioned, we've tried to be very mindful in terms of our hospital, in terms of using a lot of natural light, having it be a very much a healing environment for our patients. So I think when parents who come to tour, visit the hospital in terms of their decision-making process about whether or not to admit their child or adolescent when they're here, I think that they understand that, and that I think that's really helped them to feel at ease in terms of having their child or adolescent be here.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. Now let's say that we've now gotten to the time in which it's been 4 to 6 weeks. What happens after the comprehensive assessment and treatment program is complete? So for the parents out there, what can they, and I don't know if expect is the right word, but what can they expect in regards to the next step?
Mm-hmm. So we look at all options in terms of what is going to be most appropriate for that child or adolescent and their family. I think a lot of other assessment type programs take a more narrow scope in terms of options that are available. I would say that the majority of our patients, given the complexities of their psychiatric issues, go on to a residential treatment program or a therapeutic boarding school. However, in some cases, where children or adolescents have gone through already a lot of out-of-home placements, sometimes we recommend that the patient returns home or transitions to a lower level of care, such as day treatment or intensive outpatient. We always want to try to have kids or adolescents go into the least restrictive environment possible. So we really try to be mindful of what is best, not only now, but what's going to be best for that individual a few years from now. Some cases, wilderness therapy is our recommendation due to the level of insight that a patient lacks. And so sometimes we're recommending a wilderness program for that individual to gain more insights before they transition to a residential program or a therapeutic boarding school, so they can really be productive in terms of the work that they need to accomplish.
Now, for those of you out there, if you're trying to visualize some of the things that we've been talking about, you can also open up another window on your computer and go to the website, the UNI website, which I believe is U as in Union, F as in Frank, OUHEALTH.com/UNI. You can open up another window. You can follow along. And also, obviously, after the show, if you have any questions, that's one of the places where you can go. Now, and along with questions, I know that one of the questions that I hear most often from parents, which is, and I'm sure you do too, how will the children do after they leave? So my question is, do you have any like outcome data that you can share with us?
So in about 2015, we started to conduct outcomes research to look at how our program has impacted the emotional functioning of our children and adolescents from their perspective, as well as their parents' perspective, and then looking at family functioning as well. We have the measure that we are primarily using to assess that is the Youth Outcomes Questionnaire, the YOQ, and that takes a look at treatment progress for individuals ages 4 to 17 years old, and it tracks the actual change in one's functioning in terms of emotional wellness. Based on the preliminary results that we've analyzed, we are seeing improvement in terms of one's functioning, not only between the time of admission and discharge, but also after they leave. So at 6 months and a year out, they continue to do well and compared to how they're doing when they first get here. And I'm really excited to do more analyses around this data as our sample size increases over the next year or so.
Yeah, I think that's very important, and it's good that you're looking at it. You know, you're recontacting them 6 months afterwards or 12 months afterwards to see that things are still functioning on a very positive level. Now we've got we've got about 8 minutes left, and I've got more questions that are coming in, listener questions, two of which seem unfortunately very topical of kind of what's going on in the world these days. This one reads, my friend's 16-year-old son posted on social media that he was going to come to school on two specific dates in September with a gun and shoot his classmates. The school expelled him at the end of last year. The family never put him in treatment until just recently when he started posting again and the police got involved. Do you take adolescents who appear to be in danger to a danger to society, and if so, how can you protect the other patients if he were to become violent?
Yes, the short answer, yes, we absolutely frequently are working with youth who have made threats, homicidal threats, threatening on social media to kill their classmates. That unfortunately is a reality, and we do work with those patients and families. Obviously, safety is the number one issue with everyone. So, you know, the benefit of an inpatient hospital is that it's a very safe environment. The patients, the youth in our facility, they have very limited access to anything that they could harm themselves with or other people with. Our staff are constantly thinking about that. And there's a really good ratio of staff to patients as well. So it's a safe environment. Occasionally there are patients who become upset, angry, agitated, and that's okay. And our staff are well trained in how to work with them and keep it a safe environment. So the big issue in this sort of example that you gave would be, how can we make sure that things are going to be safe when after discharge? And although you can't always can't say 100%, but we do make, in those kinds of cases, we make that a focus of therapy, an intensive focus, and we think about where the youth may be going afterwards, and how to make sure everyone's comfortable.
Yeah, and I think to share also with this this listener, again, thank you so much for this question. I ended up working with a young man who was transported to a program, not by us, but by another company, to a program. And it was prior to the Columbine shooting. And there was a lot of media attention drawn towards this because he was taken to a program in another country. And there was a lot of very negative information. And it wasn't until I met with him and then took him to Sacramento and met with some politicians that he told his story. He told it on video and he told it in person. And what his parents had not expressed to the world because they didn't want to put a tag on him was that he had made that same threat. And they made the right decision, but yet there were people that had come out publicly was, oh no, you know, this was a terrible decision. And yet when he opened up and he chose to speak about it, and I give the parents a lot of credit, they said that, you know, they could have said that and that would have gotten rid of a lot of the publicity, but they said that it was up to him at that point to make the decision if he wanted to share that with the world. And as it turned out, as I said, I ended up traveling with him and doing a speaking tour of sorts with him. And he could not have said more positive things about his time in a program that worked on the issues that he had prior to him making those threats. So if that helps, this listener who I think is going to be talking to their friend, that may be something that will help them make what is truly a difficult decision for any parent. So Amanda, is there anything you'd like to share on that subject?
I think it's really topical right now in terms of the access that our children and adolescents have to social media and how it makes individuals who have mental health issues more vulnerable to acting out and expressing some of the thoughts that they might have, especially individuals who might be having poor reality testing. So I think it's really important, for individuals to be open, to communicate, and to help reduce the stigma around mental health issues. I think the more open that people can be about such issues, especially with their own children, I think that's going to help just make more people aware, and in turn improving the safety of others around them.
Couldn't agree more. Now, another question that sort of touches on the same issue, only the issue is more the stress that everybody else takes on, so not from necessarily the person who is threatening this, but what the other people around. And this one reads, a few weeks ago, a masked intruder came into my son's school. The principal told the teachers on the intercom to lock all the doors and windows. The man came right to my son's classroom and started knocking on the door to come in. The children were petrified, and the school did not do a debriefing after the incident. There was a little girl in the classroom who suffered from anxiety and has a shadow with her. I'm not sure what that means. She is now experiencing PTSD from the intruder incident, although he never made it into the classroom because the police apprehended him before he could get in. Do you work with children who've experienced trauma, and if so, what kind of interventions would you use with a middle school age child?
We do work with trauma. That's a horrible story too, but I'm glad the school was do the right thing. In terms of getting that man out of the school. Unfortunately, trauma is a very real issue. It's not talked about enough. Sometimes the traumatic things people just don't want to share, particularly if there's been sexual trauma. A lot of people just want to keep that to themselves. And actually, we've had plenty. After mentioning that, I just want to say that we've had plenty of instances where we're all scratching our heads trying to understand what's going on with youth, and then it comes out that there has been trauma in the past that was just never disclosed. So, in all instances, though, we provide a very safe, validating environment where we work to make youth feel comfortable with discussing what's happened to them. The best way, no matter if you're 5 years old or 17 years old, the best way to treat post-traumatic stress disorder or PTSD is to get to the point where you can talk about what happened. It's the therapy, it's the psychotherapy, and it's focused around being able to discuss what happened and manage those strong emotions that come up when you re-encounter it in your mind. So we can do that here. We do that here. We do trauma-focused CBT, trauma-focused cognitive behavioral therapy is probably the most evidence-based therapeutic approach for PTSD. In research, it's had very good outcomes. We can get that process started. Unfortunately, even though trauma and PTSD, people can overcome it, it takes longer than 4 to 6 weeks. It takes longer than just your time would be here at uni.
Well, doctor,
we would look for in addition is getting someone pointed in the right direction, making sure that the treatment program that we recommend after discharge would be able to incorporate trauma-focused therapy.
Well, doctor, what I wish is I wish I had more time. Thank you so much. I want to acknowledge you for all the good works that you're doing. And again, for everybody out there, the website is UFOUHEALTH.com/uni. Or if you're driving, you can't take that down. You can always go to the answersforthefamily.com website, and all of their information will be there. So again, thank you so much for coming on and sharing with us.
Well, thank you for having us.
Thank you.
All right. And for everybody out there, please be sure to put us on your calendar and tune in next Monday when we are joined by the author of Big Love, The Power of Living with a Wide Open Heart. And keep that heart open and be with us again next week on Answers for the Family. Thank you.
Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza and Matt Polacek, only on LA Talk Radio.